We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the In the Know Podcast. Mike, are you ready for the Cliff Alexander era?
Have been for years. Former number two high school player, just like Austin Rivers. I think he's going to bloom late, just like Doc's son.
Yeah. I mean, Austin Rivers has been a valuable contributor to one of the best teams in the Western Conference for several years now. Clearly, he's the engine of that team. So, Cliff Alexander, I mean, you actually knew something about Cliff Alexander.
he was like a big, big-time guy. Like, he's one of those guys, like Alex Poitras and all those guys that were like, supposed to be locked top five, top 10 picks before they ever played in college. And then they play and their stock just plummets. Just another camp body. Pelicans have plenty of them. I guess I always wonder, like, do you find yourself wondering what it's like for those guys? I guess more specifically, like their agents, do you think his agent has told him there is a 0% chance you're making this team? And then, like, do you just come in to maybe hope that, you know, the coaches speak well about you in the future, or you could put a couple minutes on preseason tape? Like, how naive do you think guys like this are coming in, or do they fully know that they have no chance of making the roster, but what else am I going to do this October?
Well, they got to keep hope alive, man. So the agent walks in and he's like, "I got you a chance. I got you a chance with the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm sure as a power forward, you're going to be able to go there and beat out Anthony Davis and Cheick Diallo. No problem." And he's like, "Yeah."
Is that what you would do as an agent? You just straight up lie to your client?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I just always wonder how those things go. I mean, even like Martell Webster right now has to know he has no shot of making the team. Like, what is that like as a player? I've never gone into a job knowing that I won't have that job in a couple of weeks. Like, it's just really weird. There's nothing comparable in any of our everyday lives. So I guess I always just wonder if they're completely naive and just believe in themselves so much, or if their agent tells them flat out, you have no chance of getting a spot. Let's put some good tape and preseason games, and hopefully somebody else will see you.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, what Cliff Alexander is doing is he is auditioning for D-League and hopefully overseas options that will pay him more than, you know, the $100,000 the good D-League players can sometimes get. And usually D-League players make a lot less than that. So yeah. His agent can go to, you know, China and say, well, he was on the training camp roster for New Orleans Pelicans. That's something, right?
Yeah, no, you and I know that. I just wonder if the players know that.
Right.
That's always my curiosity, because I always think athletes are the most, you know, they have to believe in themselves to an insane degree. And I just wonder how many of those guys think that they're making the Pelicans and are going to be genuinely shocked when they're cut.
I think it has to do with age most in a lot of these situations. I bet Cliff Alexander is thinking he, you know, if he plays well, he has a chance. But, you know, someone like Martell Webster is probably a bit more realistic about his chances.
All right. Well, that's way too much time dedicated to those people.
Yes.
Let's, minute for the Pelicans.
Let's talk about the other game changer that happened this week. Dante Cunningham chose to come back to the New Orleans Pelicans over a minimum contract with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And apparently, for a moment, the Milwaukee Bucks were in on things. They were going after Dante as well. It was dramatic.
Hot commodity, and we landed him.
That's right. So everybody should be really excited that we got one of the hottest free agents. Was it 70, 80 days after the opening of free agency?
I mean, the Pelicans got him. They're avoiding the luxury tax. They had to pay a little more to get him, which is interesting to me. Like, it's obvious that if everybody offers minimum deals, that Dante was probably, you know, was telling them that he might prefer somewhere else. So the funny thing to me was just that there's all this talk about how, you know, AD and Cousins and a third guy is going to want to come play with them. And, like, it was hard enough to get Dante Cunningham to come back. So,
that's a little harsh. So like, you got to look at it from Dante's point of view. He felt like he was probably being paid less than he was worth already. He spent 3 years here hustling, working hard, working with the coaching staff, doing everything they told him to do on the floor, and now he opts out, and we won't even offer him what he was making. So,
well, nobody else would either. I mean, that's got to be a reality check, and then the other teams he could go to don't have a spot where he could. He could very easily start in New Orleans for a few months, if not the whole season. So, you know, to me, the only team offering definite minutes and perhaps a lot of minutes, plus you have these two guys that supposedly are so good that everybody wants to play with, or a lot of people would, and more money, and it still took them what felt like 10 years to make a decision. So, I mean... if the Pelicans start winning, I could definitely see other people wanting to play with AD and Cousins, but right now they aren't the pull that, you know, you would think that two top 15 guys are on paper. But the main thing I wanted to ask you with Cunningham is, when you sign him, are you signing him? Do you think that you're signing him to start the season more to play three? Or is he just exclusively a backup four to you?
With Hill out, I expect him to get minutes at the three. I wouldn't even be surprised if he started at the three, knowing how they value continuity and all that. But Dante is a, lower tier fifth big man who can play power forward okay.
Yeah, I just think it's hard to both start him at the three and then get all the minutes that you would need as a backup four, unless you're going to put Diallo or Ajinsa in the rotation every night.
Right.
Like, it's really, because if you're only going with three bigs, even, you know, if you if you have AD and Cousins, one of them on the floor every night, and you're only going with three bigs, that backup power forward's got to play about 23, 24 minutes. And if that's the case, are you telling me that Cunningham's playing 35 total because he's starting at the three as well? I just find that hard. What do you think's more likely? Cunningham starts at the three and Ajinso or Diallo is a regular in the rotation, or somebody else starts at the three and Cunningham is getting almost all of his minutes at backup four?
I think he's going to start at the three and they're going to play him 28 to 30 minutes a game.
Yeah, that still means that there's going to be minutes. So do you think
there'll be a fourth guy in there? Diallo or Ajinso, and I'm really shocked you did not mention Asik. Like, shouldn't Omer be in this conversation?
I don't think he's ever playing in the NBA again. I really don't.
I think you're right.
I don't know. I mean, I think that would be the thing you would think. But if you look at what the Pelicans were doing when they really got rolling with AD and Cousins last year, basically those two guys sopped up, about 72, 73 minutes of the 96 big man minutes, and one of them was always on the floor, and they usually just had one other guy playing. So I'm really interested to see that. I
think Perry Jones III is going to get that last spot?
I know people are probably screaming for Diallo, but I still struggle to imagine a coach who's on the hot seat, a GM who's on the hot seat, putting that much faith and making a guy like Diallo a regular rotation player when you've got to get out to a fast start, when it's playoffs or you lose your job. Like, I think if one of those guys is playing to start the season, I actually think it would be Ajinso.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think it's a pretty significant signing because I think Cunningham is going to get pretty major minutes one way or the other, and what would they have done if Cunningham wouldn't have signed? I think he could be getting... I don't think it would be insane if Cunningham got the fourth most minutes on this team.
Well, the last year, didn't he get third, I think? I mean, he was it was pretty close to that. The year before, he was second to Alonzo G, I think.
Yeah.
Why didn't we bring back G? Like, he would have been amazing for us.
Yeah, no, it's another option, but... Yeah. I mean, you pretty much you gave your ideas about Cunningham on the last pod. Are you at least happy that they didn't crazy overspend or give him multiple years on the contract?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not going to complain about Dante and Dante's contract. I mean, he's not a good basketball player, and he's being paid as he's basically being given a 1-year contract slightly above the minimum as a sop to his pride, and if that enabled you to bring him back and you get some sort of continuity, great, fine. Because, is that, $400,000 or whatever extra, $200,000 extra, does it matter? For 1 year, it doesn't matter in the greater scheme of things. So, fine.
Do you think there's any chance we see another little leap? So, Dante Cunningham's a guy who, prior to 2015-2016, never made more than, I mean, he had three total three-pointers in his entire career made. Three. And then 2 years ago, he hits 55 of them, shoots 31%. Last year, hits 71, shoots 39%. Is there any chance that we see another leap and maybe he's a guy who hits 100 threes, 120 threes, and shoots around 40%. Is there any chance that this trend continues?
Sure. That is the one thing players get better at is shooting. And he only took three, but he was always a mid-range jumper. I remember one game, I can't even remember who he was playing for. Was it Minnesota at the time? Where he was drilling the David West 18-foot, 19-foot jump shot on us nonstop, and it was just killing us. So he's always been a guy with a decent jump shot and taking a few steps outside and slowly learning how that works. I think it's perfectly reasonable. I don't expect it. And if he slides off a little bit from last year, if this last year was his career year as a three-point shooter, that wouldn't surprise me either. Like, but he's at the age where he's basically at his peak and starting to decline a little bit, but shooting tends to stay pretty static. So after you reach a level for like 4 or 5 years, you're going to have a pretty static number. So.
And the other thing people seem to worry about is if he is the starting small forward, you know, do you put him on threes? Do you think he has the foot speed to at least be passable? Obviously not against the Kawhi Leonards, the Paul Georges, the LeBron James, but your average small forward, let's say, I don't know, who's an average small
Wilson
forward?
Chandler.
Yeah. I mean, is he a negative, a neutral, or a plus as a defender, as a small forward?
So if you're talking on the ball, I think Dante is perfectly satisfactory. He's an average defender, and he works hard, and he hustles, and he does what he needs to do. I think where Dante falls down is if you need a guy who's going to cover a lot of ground and help and be able to crash and recover, I just don't think he's got the speed or the size to be able to be in, you know, an impact guy on the perimeter. So that's where the real problem with Dante on the defensive end for me is. But as far as an on-the-ball defender, I think he'll be fine guarding Wilson Chandler. It's just when they put him into a Wilson Chandler, I don't know, who's, I guess we can't really use Moutier because he's trash, Jamal Murray, Wilson Chandler pick and roll, and suddenly Dante has to switch on to Jamal Murray, we've got a problem.
Okay. All right, so right now today, you think he's our starting small forward to start the season?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so let's be 100% honest. They're going to go into training camp, and it is going to be wide open. Dante and Darius Miller and probably Etuan Moore are going to be in full competition for that starting spot at the three. Now, I don't think Etuan Moore will win that spot. I think he's just too small, and they recognize that. So I think it's really between Darius and Dante.
You think Tony Allen gets any crack at it, or is he strictly a reserve?
I think Tony Allen is strictly a reserve. I'm still worried about how old he is.
Yeah.
And he has had a bad, like, last year was a really fluke year for him. He played the second most minutes of his career. He's 36. He's turning 37 this year during the season. Like, this is a guy who puts tons of energy and fights through screens and takes elbows. He's gonna be banged up. I mean, and I'm 100% certain that there will be a few games this year where we'll all be extremely excited by what he just did defensively to somebody. And there'll also be a few games this year where we'll be like, damn it, why is he taking three-pointers and missing everything? But I don't think he'll ever really crack the starting rotation. And I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, and so that's probably our current small forward. I want to move on to a guy who was a small forward of the past. This week, Quincy Pondexter's kind of been hinting at it. And finally, the story came out. I believe, was it Mark Spears who wrote it, or somebody
Chris
undefeated?
Haynes, I think.
Chris Haynes, sorry.
Yeah.
And finally, we get the story, at least from Quincy's point of view, on what has been going on these past years, kind of his trials and tribulations. Did you get a chance to read it?
I did.
What was the first thing or two that really stuck out to you?
So the first couple things that stuck out to me were mostly that it was obviously the initial diagnosis and treatment was not executed properly. How often those things fail anyways, but there is clearly something wrong with his knee, and when they went in to fix it the first time, they did a really bad job. But the whole story, and the story about him getting MRSA, which is the resistant strain of an infection, and being stuck in a hospital for, I think it was 2 months or a month and a half, basically taking antibiotics nonstop to try to just control the MRSA. Like, none of this is a thing that I feel reflects on the Pelicans in any way. Like, you don't get MRSA because you were doing physical therapy and hanging out in a weight room with the Pelicans trainers. You get that because you're in a hospital where superbugs grow because that's where they're facing the most adversity, and you have something screwed up go wrong and you get an infection during the recovery or actually during the surgery. And then that thing destroys you. Like Grant Hill, if I don't know if anybody remembers this, Grant Hill had ankle surgery when he was in Orlando. He went back, had a second one, and during that second one, he got MRSA, and they had to cut away portions of his tendon and his calf muscle because the infection was so awful, and they thought he was going to die. These things happen when you have multiple surgeries on parts of your body. It didn't look good. The thing with Alvin Gentry saying that he wasn't showing up for MRIs was weird because Alvin Gentry wasn't even the coach when that was supposedly happening. But, you know, in general, the story sounded like it really sucked. I mean, it sucked to be Quincy Pondexter for 2 years. No question about it. But I didn't go away from it other than the initial diagnosis was screwed up. Is that me being rosy glasses? Am I being stupid here?
I guess my thing is I wouldn't say individually anything was incredibly egregious. My biggest takeaway is just like these are the kind of things that are more likely to happen to poorly run or organizations or ones that communicate poorly with each other. I guess my thing is like I know that the Pelicans don't really like to comment on injuries and progress or whatever, but you've got your guy hanging out to dry and you know Quincy, like, it's very apparent in that story that he was very hurt by what people were saying about him and, you know, how people thought he was just collecting a paycheck to do nothing and wasn't trying to come back. And, you know, the team was at least somewhat complicit in some things. And then even if Gentry makes that mistake through some error, that's the narrative that kind of got ran with. And the team did nothing to come out and stop it. Like, I feel like a professionally run, like a top tier organization has their players' backs and, you know, helps control the narrative and helps, you know, the player when they're going through a tough time to not make it worse by having them hear over and over again how, you know, people think they're stealing money. Like, I can't say any one thing is so egregious, but I can't imagine if first of all, I don't think Quincy gets that bad if he's playing for the Spurs or Warriors because I think they do something first. But even if some of the same stuff goes on, they're controlling the narrative and having the back of their player and, you know, their player's not going through all that. So that's my biggest takeaway is I just – you know, he was obviously bothered by this, and I know he would have voiced that to the team, and they just choose to say nothing, and that just didn't feel right to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest problems with just injuries and the Pelicans in general has been they are terrible at giving any sort of information, and when they do give information, it comes out kind of leaky in a weird way, and then they end up looking really bad because it's never accurate. Or you find out way after the fact. Like, this offseason with Solomon Hill. So we find out that he has this injury, and that the day that he goes under the knife and gets the surgery. But if you take a look at some of the other information we have, there were some voluntary workouts that he wasn't part of, and later we find out the reason why he wasn't part of them was because he already had this injury. So it's been 2 weeks, and they've evaluated the stuff, and they don't even announce any of that information until later. And, like, what's it, if the players are fine with it, and that's the big thing here is is there are some players won't want you talking about their injuries, but if the players are fine with it, just what's the problem with saying there's this injury, we're evaluating it, and we think it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks, but we have to reevaluate it 6 weeks. Just transparency. It's not that difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. And then, you know, I totally get them trading him. I truly believe that if Hill doesn't go down, Pondexter is still here. But the way it played out with Hill going down, you have a choice between Tony Allen, who played, as you said on the other pod, the second most minutes he ever played in his career last year. Even though he's older, you know he could play today, versus Quincy Pondexter, who was a below average, you know, NBA player when he was healthy. Now over 2 years and all this weight loss and whatever, like, you can't depend on him for rotations minutes. So I don't really blame them for trading him. It's what they had to do after Hill got injured. But I don't know. I just don't feel like a professional organization kind of leaves their player hanging out to dry from that. So it is what it is, I guess, moving forward. I wonder how much it hurts them, you know, with getting other guys. But when you look at it, almost every other organization, save for two or three, has black marks. I mean, even one like Houston, you know that you're going there just, you know, you're just another asset. And, you know, every organization has things that an agent would tell a player to be wary of or whatever. I think for the most part, the Pelicans have treated their players very professionally and try to, you know, even when they no longer have any use for them, get them to a spot that is beneficial. So I don't think this hurts them that much, but I feel a little bit for Quincy, and, you know, I'm rooting for him this next year.
Yeah, I am too. I hope you see some success in Chicago, which is going to be a dumpster fire.
Yeah, I don't even know if he'll be there, but if he is, good for him. The other big thing that happened this week was, you know, I guess it'll be official tomorrow, but Melo is going to OKC for a package that, you know, is not I don't really get, like, especially if you're trying to rebuild, but essentially, Enes Kanter, a second-round pick, and Doug McDermott. My question to you is, I know Melo kind of controlled this because he had a no-trade clause, but if Melo did expand his teams and say New Orleans was on the list, would you have beaten that offer to get Melo?
How many years does Melo have left on his contract? Is it just one or is it two? I can't remember.
So it's two, but he has the option for next year, which he'll probably definitely pick up just because it's so much and not many, but you never know.
I would probably say no at this point. And 2 years ago, it was kind of a cool idea to put him next to Anthony Davis and have two deadly scorers. But Melo is his true shooting percentage and his efficiency as a scorer has declined now. He's at an older age, and he's just a pretty average efficiency scorer at this point. And he's never been a great defensive player, and his defense has gotten worse and worse. So I always struggle with this kind of player because you know that there's probably going to be five games this year where Melo is going to look like the Melo of, you know, 4 years ago when he took the Knicks to the it wasn't the Eastern Conference, but the semifinals. He's going to score, you know, 38 points in a game. He's going to be efficient. He's going to be driving people into the ground near the basket and getting offensive rebounds and just looking amazing. And then there's going to be most of the season where he's just okay. He's a fine scorer, but not giving you much on defense. And that's a valuable player when the Pelicans have no small forward whatsoever. But I don't know. I wouldn't want to give up. Like the only way to really beat it is to put our first round pick in there, and I don't want to give up my first round pick for Melo at this point. Even though I know the first round pick will probably be worth a little bit less, I'd rather use it for something else. Tell me why I'm dumb.
No, I don't know. Do you think if Solomon Hill is healthy, Etuan Moore, Solomon Hill, and Ajinsa is a better or worse package than what the Knicks got?
I think it's about the same. I think it's worse because of the years.
Yeah, I just it's so funny. Like, the one angle I haven't heard anybody take, but the first thing I thought of is like, of all everything I think about this trade, I think it's most reflective of how bad the Knicks think the Ryan Anderson contract is. Because they're like, Ryan Anderson, no way. Enes Kanter, okay, we'll take that. Like, I think Enes Kanter is a terrible contract, and they're fine swallowing that. So, good God, how bad do they think the Ryan Anderson contract is? I think it's something I wouldn't have done if it was pre-DeMarcus trade. You know, if we never make the DeMarcus trade, and they go to be interesting, but or if you could just program players to do what you want them to do, because, you know, I've been banging the drum for the Pelicans to be an offensive rebounding team. Good God, put Carmelo at the three with these guys, and they should get every shot that they miss. But, you know, he's just going to hold the ball. He's not going to move it. He's not going to play D. So, you know, or even having him as a super sixth man, but he would never do that. So, no, it's not an opportunity I really missed out on. And I don't really feel like it made OKC much better. I think it gave them a little room for error in that if Paul George went down, you know, before this trade, I think OKC would have been in trouble. But now if one of those two guys go down, you know, I think that they'll still be okay. I think they might ironically be worse when all three are healthy. The thoughts of them being a quote unquote title contender is just laughable to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't consider them a title contender when the Golden State Warriors. So if you threw out the Golden State Warriors, and we're going to get to this in a little bit, if you threw out the Golden State Warriors, are the Thunder then a finals contender? I would probably say yes.
We'll get to mine, but like if the Warriors, and I was actually like, if they protest the entire season and they just sit out the entire season, I'd probably make the Spurs my favorite, not because of talent, or I don't even think they're that good, but just because playoff series, one side's got popped, and then, you know, the Rockets have a bunch of guys who have failed in the playoffs, and OKC has what they have. I would bet on Pop.
Okay. All right. You have anything more to say about Melo?
No, I am mellowed out.
Okay. All right. So should we move on to the Western Conference?
Yeah. Just last thing I just wanted to ask you. I know we touched on it just briefly, but just rotations. Now that we have, I mean, this roster is pretty much set. I still think that there's a good chance that come January or February, Dell moves that first rounder and some contracts for a guy that he thinks could give him another shot in the arm. But for right now, this is going to be the team. You know, obviously you have AD, you have Cousins, and you have Drew, I think, taking up about, let's say, 105 minutes. So you got 135 minutes for all the other guys. We both said we think Cunningham gets major minutes, obviously Rondo and Moore. Who do you think is most likely to be the odd man out in the rotation? Because I don't think that they're going to go super deep. So Ajinsa / Diallo, so big man, Clark, Allen, Crawford, or Miller. Who is getting DNP healthies of that crew?
I'm going to say Allen.
So, interesting. Tony Allen, why?
Because, the problem with Tony Allen as a primary part of that group is we already have so many non-shooters already going in there. And I think they're going to want to have Clark and Crawford getting minutes, one or the other. And I don't know. I think one of those two guys is going to win the backup shooting guard, I'm going to jack shots. I kind of think it's going to be Clark. But it might be Crawford. Crawford, if he continues to shoot like he did last year, could be, which, by the way, is probably unlikely. He could be a pretty decent player for him. So I don't know. It just feels like they're going to have Miller to cover some sort of small forward minutes. Unless he's an utter disaster, he's going to be getting some minutes. Etuan Moore is going to get minutes because he can swing to either shooting guard or point guard and handle the ball a little bit, do whatever he needs to, cover whatever spot they need to, swing to some small forward if necessary. And then you have Clark or Crawford winning minutes too. So I think Tony Allen's kind of out unless there is a really good wing player on the other team and they want to try to shut him down. I think that's the only time Tony Allen's going to see the floor, except for when we have the obvious injury that's obviously going to have to happen besides Solomon Hill. We have to have more.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think, to me, it just feels like you just go small all the time. Like, not all the time, obviously. You got AD and Boogie. But I just feel like when that bench comes in, I could imagine having lineups where, like, you have three quote-unquote guards, Darius Miller at the four, and then AD or Cousins at five. Like, it's harder for me to imagine Ajinsa or Diallo getting minutes just because they're tall when obviously you have guys who have so much more skill on the perimeter. I have right now for the other guys, Rondo getting 28 minutes, Moore getting 24, Cunningham 25, Ajinsa / Diallo 0, Clark 15. I actually got Allen getting 17. Crawford 10 and Miller 15. And I think you're just seeing lineups that when AD or Cousins is out, sometimes you have Cunningham at the four, but the times when Cunningham's not at the four, you just got out of basically four guards and AD or, you know, whatever you consider Miller. But you just have those guys and Cousins or those guys and AD and you just play that way. That's, I don't know. I just don't know why you force less talented guys like Ajinsa into the rotation instead of Tony Allen. But now I'm curious to see what they do.
Yeah, I think you're a little over optimistic that there will be 0 minutes for Diallo and Ajinsa. I think you'll probably see 10 for whichever wins.
I mean, when they were really rolling, there was none. There was none last year.
Okay.
like I said, I would be 100% sure if Cunningham didn't start. If Cunningham didn't start,
yeah,
I would bet that all of his minutes would be backup power forward, and then AD or Cousins is playing as center for all 48 minutes, and then you would never see any of those guys, which I don't know, it makes sense to me. The one argument I have where I think it'll be tough for Tony Allen is I think that you've got to stagger him and Rondo. I don't know how you could put a lineup out on the court where both of those guys are on the court at the same time. And if that's the case, then, you know, Gentry could throw anybody in at any time and just figure it out. But I think he could only throw Allen in when Rondo's out. So it's going to be a little bit harder for him to get minutes.
All right, I know we're supposed to go to the Western Conference, but I really want to have this conversation with you, so I'm going to ambush you with something and get your take on it, because I have a very distinct take on this. I've said it on Twitter a bunch of times. A bunch of people think I'm an idiot for it. So let's hear what your thought is. The common statement about the Pelicans is they need shooters, they need shooters, they need shooters. Okay. But if you just take a look at percentages, the list of players on this team who are bad shooters, based on percentage, is Tony Allen, probably Rondo, Anthony Davis, and then Ajinsa, Ashik, and Diallo, the big men. But Crawford can shoot, Moore can shoot, Miller can shoot, Frank Jackson probably can shoot, Drew Holiday can shoot, Dante can shoot, DeMarcus Cousins can shoot. So they all have percentages that are around league average or a little bit higher. Dante, of course, is the best percentage-wise last year at 39%. So when people say, does this team have shooters, and people say they need shooters, they need shooters, are going to suck. Is that a reality that this team missed the boat by not going out and finding some way to get, you know, a Kyle Korver or a J.J. Redick or so? And I know those two guys were not signing here because they got really nice contracts where they went. But, you know, somebody who could shoot 41%, make the trade for Alan Crabb or go for Bazemore, who's had three consistent years of 39% shooting. Like, would any of that made a major difference to how this team's going to play?
I see, this is so hard because, like, Anthony Morrow is a shooter, but I would never trade Tony Allen for him.
Okay.
Just because the only thing Anthony Morrow could shoot. But I guess what, to me, what's inherent in the we need shooters thing is you would hope that that person also means shooters who can do other things well, could move the ball well. Like, if you traded out Tony Allen for Joe Ingles right now, yeah, I think that a lot of the worries would kind of be quelled about, you know, this offense. But if you trade out Tony Allen for Anthony Morrow, no, I don't think it makes a difference because I don't think Anthony Morrow plays because his defense is so bad. He doesn't move the ball. He doesn't have the basketball IQ that Gentry's going to want, so he doesn't play anyway. So I think people will say shooters and then just, you know, cry out for guys who have a high three-point percentage. Like, that's way too simple. But, yeah, if they could have gotten guys who did multiple things well and have to be respected, yeah, Rondo has a good percentage, but nobody respects him. The only reason his percentage is good is because once in a while he'll jack up one and there's nobody within 8 feet of him and it, you know, and it goes in. Cunningham, we've watched it enough. I mean, teams just pray for him to shoot, and we've seen games where he's missed four or five wide open ones in the corner that if a couple of those go down, it's a totally different game. So we could talk about percentages, yeah, but I mean, as far as who other teams respect, I think that other teams probably respect Etuan more. And I think if Crawford is starting to get hot, they'll run out and respect him. But percentages, I don't really care much about that. I don't think that there's guys that other teams respect. And, yeah, that is going to make it a little harder for AD and Cousins.
Yeah. I mean, my whole point about this was there people who are making the argument that this team has shooters, like, it, you know, there's the idea of gravity, and there's all kinds of research about gravity and whether players pull other, you know, clear space. But, like, this team has nobody on it who is going to make anyone respect. And I get the idea that, hey, Dante Cunningham gets open. If he shoots at 39.2% from three-point range, it's great that he's being left wide open, and that's going to help our team because he's going to get those shots. But, you know, Dante Cunningham has a slow release. If the ball comes out to him and he doesn't have a bazillion feet to play with, he's not going to do anything for us. And the other team's not going to respect him because they know they can recover on him. So they're going to jam Davis, they're going to jam Cousins, no matter what Dante Cunningham is doing out there. And it's true for almost every single player on this team. So if they had J.J. Redick, that might be something different. But J.J. Redick made $23 million this year, which is, by the way, insane. So, I don't know. It's just, this team has some people who are capable of knocking down the open shot, and it will probably help the team a little bit at places. But these shooters are not going to help our core scorers deal with lessened defensive pressure.
Yeah, yeah. There's still other ways to create offense, to create space and movement, so I have some faith that they'll be able to do that. I think I wish I could see the future and know what Etuan Moore and Darius Miller's stats were for this year, because those are just two big X factors for me. I started to see, you know, in spots, once Moore got settled in, Gentry actually really likes him off the bench. I think you could see a pretty big jump for him this season now that he's comfortable. And then Darius Miller is, you could tell me that he plays 80 minutes this year, or you could tell me he averages 20 to 25 per game and he's in the comeback player of the year conversation, where he's a respectable rotation player in the NBA, and like neither would surprise me. So those two guys, I kind of wish I could see what their stat lines were, because then I think I'd be able to make a pretty good guess about our overall offense.
Okay. One question I have for rotation for you. This roster, if you were putting the all IQ team out there, so you want to see ball movement, hitting the right guy, making the right decision on offense, who are your starting five?
So I'd probably go Rondo. Yeah, I think as a shooting guard, Drew would be all right. I would just go Rondo, then Drew, Tony Allen, AD, and Cousins.
Okay. I was wondering if you're going to put Clark in there or not.
I like Clark as a guy receiving the ball, and cutting and moving or whatever. I don't think he fully is going to, help orchestrate things or I just think Tony Allen's a really smart player, and I'm hoping that they could find minutes for him. I really think something like Drew, Clark, Tony Allen, Darius Miller at the floor, and Boogie at center, like something like that would be a fun lineup where he would have four other shooters and he's mostly a cutter and plays off of them. I hope they find good minutes for Tony Allen, because I think he could do a lot of things. Obviously not shooting, but pretty much everything else that this team could really use.
Yeah. Okay, Western Conference. In the Eastern Conference, we had contenders and playoff locks and fighting for the playoffs and hot garbage. In the Western Conference, we have the Warriors. We have playoff locks, fighting for the playoffs and hot garbage. I have another category of mine we'll get to in a little bit. But it's not one that I expected you to put anything into. So where do you want to start? You want to start with garbage or playoff locks?
Let's just start and get the garbage out of the way.
Okay.
Hopefully go through it.
How many teams you got in your hot garbage?
So hot garbage, I've got four, and I'd be surprised if you had a different number.
I have four.
Okay.
I think one team might be different, though. But we'll see. All right, so hot garbage, I'll go first. I have the Los Angeles Lakers as hot garbage.
Definitely.
Like, there are people who actually believe that somehow Lonzo Ball is going to come in and take the Los Angeles Lakers with, I guess, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Brook Lopez, and they're going to turn this team into a potential playoff team. And so Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Lopez. Go ahead.
LeVar Ball said 50 wins. Book it.
That's right, because he's never been wrong about anything before. So Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a good average shooting guard in the NBA. But he also played for the Detroit Pistons last year with more talent, and they didn't make the playoffs. And Brook Lopez anchored a team that had the worst record in the year, for 3 years running. And Julius Randle has found a new trainer and looks really ripped and muscled, but he's not a defensive player. Brandon Ingram is still not a defensive player and still a stick, and he might be a little bit better offensively this year, but he was kind of poor last year. And so what is Lonzo Ball really working with here? And he's a rookie. Lonzo Ball's a rookie. Like, give me a break. Even Chris Paul couldn't elevate the Hornets at the time past 39 wins. And he had statistically one of the best years ever for a rookie. Ever. So, stupid. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me you think that they're all going to the playoffs.
No chance.
Corey Brewer?
Yeah, I'm just curious where they go. Like, I think that they've got to try to be respectable. I think this whole idea that Paul George and LeBron are definitely coming there is, to me, I don't buy any of that, especially if they go out and they win 22 games. Like, you really think that those two guys are going to come there? So I think that they've got to try to be respectable. And with this team, like, I could see some offensive firepower. I think Brook Lopez is, you know, he's a guy that could easily put up 20 on this team, and Julius Randle could get buckets, Clarkson off the bench, et cetera. But I don't know how they stop anybody. Like, I think that this could very easily be the 30th ranked defensive team in the NBA, and I don't think they have the firepower to outscore what they're going to give up. I'm just curious to see, like, what they do as the season goes on as far as trying to move guys and acquire things and dump guys, because, like I said, I think that they've got to show that they're at least somewhat respectable to get those big guys next year. It would be so hard for me to believe. I know that they probably think they're great and they could take any team to the promised land, but LeBron and Paul George coming to a 22-win team.
Yeah, it's not happening.
And that being said, what was Cleveland the year before LeBron got there?
It was probably 30-something.
So, and then he goes there with Kevin Love, and all of a sudden they're in the finals. You know,
now you're going to be curious.
Yeah.
You have to look it up while you talk.
he probably thinks Paul George is better than Kevin Love. So, you know, maybe based off of that, he'll think that he could do it again. I don't know why you would sign up for that if you're LeBron at the end of your career to have to put all that on your back again. But
33-49. So,
well,
you can look at that and say there's potential, right?
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, I don't really have much about this team. I'd be curious from you, if they did start dumping guys, who would you want from this team as a rotation player?
As a rotation player?
Yeah, I mean, you're not getting Brandon Ingram. They're not just giving him to you, whatever.
Caldwell Pope?
Would you?
We need a wing. Like, I'm sorry. Like, and I know he's a little small to play small forward, but he's a fine basketball player, and he's got a year on his contract. That's it. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind stealing Larry Nance Jr. from them.
Yeah. Be a nice combo forward.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. All right, I got nothing else on the league.
they're that unexciting of a team. All right, give me one of your garbage teams.
All right, so I got Sacramento and just this weird roster.
They got Vince and Zach Randolph, though.
Yeah, I mean, so like if you're the uber dork rebuild type of guy who wants to try to figure out how to get this team good again, you're like, all right, I got De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield in the backcourt, two young guys, and I'm just going to build around that. And then between LeBissier and Willie Cauley-Stein and maybe Harry Giles, even if one of them just becomes a very good player, I've got a big man, and then Justin Jackson's going to be a good role player. All right, I got this young team, Bogdanovich coming over. I'm excited. I got this young team. And then they go out and they get Randolph, they get Vince Carter, and they get George Hill. And I just don't know what the goal is. Like I could see one of those guys. So De'Aaron Fox is definitely not ready. So George Hill made sense to me. But then the Randolph and Carter ones were just very confusing. And I'm curious how that plays out, because you can't sign those guys and then not give them minutes. They'll tear your locker room apart. But if you give them minutes, then you're not giving them to guys that are going to need them to develop. So I really didn't understand those two signings.
Yeah, I think they went one too far. Like, I could see you bringing in George Hill. Like, George Hill has a history of being injured a lot. So, you know, he's going to play 50 games for you over the course of the season. Fox will get plenty of starter minutes. He'll learn from George Hill, who's, you know, a George Popovich-bred major veteran presence. Like, he's going to hopefully impart knowledge. You bring in Vince Carter and have him hold the small forward position, because they don't have much in the way of a small forward rotation right now. Like, they got Bogdanovich. They have Justin Jackson. Like, I can't really think of anybody else. Like, who's Garrett Temple's too small. So Vince could come in, play small forward, be like another veteran guy. But when you have this list of bigs you want to play, why bring in Zach Randolph? And I guess you could say, well, I want him to teach them how to play and stuff. But Zach is not going to take well on a bad team to sitting on the bench. And Vince probably isn't either. So I think you're right. It's just a little too much. Like, bring in some veterans that maybe don't have the same level of, you know, expectation as these guys that they brought in. Is there any chance that a lineup of George Hill, Buddy Hield, Vince Carter, Zach Randolph, and, let's say, Willie Cauley-Stein is good?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No,
I figured I'd ask.
I mean, the guy I'm actually curious about, I actually think that Bogdanovich could end up being long-term be a better player than Buddy Hield. But I don't know how he's going to get minutes on this team. And then, like I said, Justin Jackson's another guy who could probably use him. Malachi Richardson, you might as well throw him away now. He's not going to get anything. So, I don't know. It's just a weirdly constructed team for those reasons. I want to get what you think on Buddy Hield. I mean, do you think, obviously, you know, their owner thinks that he's the next Steph Curry. Do you think that they've put him in a position to take another leap this year? And do you think we're going to see a much better Buddy, or is he pretty much going to even out as what we've seen last year?
No, I think he's going to get better. I fully expect that he'll be a decent player this year and be able to knock down the open three and maybe do a little bit more off the dribble. I mean, if at some point in his career Buddy Hield doesn't average at least 17 points a game, I will be surprised. I just, like, there's all kinds of shooting guards who, you just have to be an average shooting guard to be able to hit, you know, 14, 15 points a game, and I think he's going to be slightly better than average. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all this year. He's going to be the primary scorer for them in a lot of situations. He's going to get all the chances in the world next to George Hill and De'Aaron Fox to work off of them and get easy shots. I fully expect that we'll see better than he was last year. Like, do you see anyone on this team who's going to be taking the ball out of Buddy's hands as a featured scorer for, you know, almost all of the game?
Yeah, like I said, I think Bogdanovich will become a crowd favorite pretty early on. I think he could be a guy. I think George Hill is better creating for himself than he is for others. I don't know. I would have been curious to see this team if they would have just stripped it down, went young, went strictly role players, let De'Aaron Fox, and maybe they would have had some other lesser vet run the show for half the year or a year or whatever, and just really featured Buddy. But I think there'll be games where we look at the box score and he only got 17 minutes and he scored 4 points.
Wow.
And they're just, because they have all these other players, and the second that it's not his night, Bogdanovich goes in, or, you know, they even try to get Malachi Richardson some minutes, or Vince Carter's going in. I don't know. I would have kind of gone the other way and made him more of a feature this year, and I don't think he's going to be.
So let me ask you this question. Is there any chance Buddy Hield goes the way of McLemore?
I don't think that bad, just because he's a smarter guy, harder working guy, but I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere in game 30, you know, we read a story about how now Sacramento's going to try Buddy off the bench and see if he could blossom in that role. And then we see that kind of stick, and Buddy Hield is a sixth man moving forward and maybe even for the foreseeable future.
Eesh. Eesh. Poor Buddy. Let's stop talking about the Kings. They suck.
Thank you.
Phoenix Suns is my next team on the hot garbage pile. Do you have the Phoenix Suns on your hot garbage pile?
Of course.
Well, I thought maybe you were going to be like, yeah, well, they've got, you know, Jared Dudley and T.J. Warren, and that Josh Jackson guy is going to come in and be the best rookie ever in the history of ever.
Tyson Chandler, who actually, the one thing I was really happy with the new 2K18 is they have Tyson Chandler tip the ball out a lot when you play as the 2007-08 Hornets. They've actually been really, really
good at that.
Except for when they have that team, they give you the top seven in the rotation and then just generic players for guys 8 through 13. That really pissed me off. There's no Gennaro Pargo on that game. So
Pargo was, like, he actually was finishing in game 7 against the Spurs.
Yeah, no, they have, the only bench guys they have are Bonzi and then Birdman.
Really?
Yeah, so that got me a little frustrated. I didn't get to play with Pargo, but anyway, I don't know how we got off on that. But this, I mean, this, so this Phoenix team, Booker, I really like. I think Bledsoe, I think they should have tried to move him. I don't know why you have a guy like that there when you just shut him down.
Do you think that they actually think they're going to win games this year?
I don't think their GM wants to, no. But the players do, of course, yeah, and the coach is going to try too. I mean, they're going to talk themselves into all the quote-unquote talent they have, and they do. I mean, you look at the roster, they just signed Anthony Bennett, a former number one pick. They got Bender, who was 4. They got Jess Jackson, who was just 4 this year. You know, obviously Alex Len, who was a top 5 pick. Chris was 8 the year before. Booker playing like a top 3 pick. Like, they have all this quote-unquote talent and pedigree on their team. I think they're going to talk themselves into, hey, you never know what'll happen. But I just would have never brought Eric Bledsoe back. I think he knows that he's eventually on his way out. And I don't think guys like that are beneficial for the locker room.
Any chance that they just brought them all back with the expectation that they could get more for Bledsoe at the trade deadline, maybe?
Yeah, I guess. You're going to have to play him pretty significantly for him to be able to get some.
But who else are you going to play? Like, Brandon Knight is injured for the whole season now, if I remember right. And so Tyler Ulis, you're going to play him?
Like, but my thing is with Bledsoe, do you think you go to him and go, hey, we want to feature Devin Booker here, make that happen? Like, Eric Bledsoe thinks he's better than Devin Booker, like, without a shadow of doubt in his mind. And I just think things like that, like, they eventually boil over. I wouldn't have a guy like that there, where if you bring in a new guy, even if he is older like Bledsoe, he goes, okay, you know, Booker was here before me, this is his team, I'm just going to make it work. I think a guy like Bledsoe is just spiteful, thinks and knows he's better than Devin Booker, and I don't think that he's going to help showcase him as much as you would want. So I wouldn't bring a guy like that back. I would almost give him away before I would bring him back and then hope that maybe somebody gives me something for him in January or February.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I'm just, like, Bledsoe and Booker have already proven that the two of them aren't going to take the team anywhere. And, Chris was so raw. If he turns into a good NBA player this year, it would be a shock. So, and Tyson Chandler's been over the hill for a while.
Yeah. With this team, how scared, so we kind of look forward and let's imagine that we think the Pelicans are going to be good, and this is the start of, let's say they become Atlanta or, you know, one of those teams that are making the playoffs every year, Memphis, and doing pretty well. How far away do you think Phoenix is from being one of those young teams that could give the Pelicans trouble and 2 or 3 years? Do you think that that's a possibility, or do you think that they're just going to continuously be one of the bottom teams in the West for the foreseeable future?
No, I think they're one impact player away. So I think that Devin Booker will be a engine for a good offense. I think that Josh Jackson will probably be a pretty solid wing player who has a chance of being a little bit better than that and will be good defensively. I think that what they need is a big man of any type. Like if that bat shit crazy article where they traded absolutely nothing to the Pelicans for Anthony Davis, if they got Anthony Davis, I think that they could be a pretty scary team.
Yeah. Well, no kidding, but I mean, they're not going to get Anthony. Let's say.
That's right.
I mean, I'm trying to think about what's realistic. Like
Kevin Love.
Yeah, so if this team got Kevin Love, let's say they get him for Bender, Alex Lynn, and, you know, TJ Warren.
Yeah.
So it's Booker, Love, and Josh Jackson moving forward. Do you think that's a team that we even have to worry about making the playoffs?
No. I think it's fighting at the bottom of the pile to try to get into the playoffs.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious to see where this team goes. I think we're going to look back and they're going to say, man, they really got a guy in Devin Booker who exceeded expectations. If they would have just made this pick, you know, with some of their other high draft choices, it would have really been exciting. Like, to me, and I was saying it for them, even though I wanted them, you know, I wanted the Pelicans to take them. To me, if they take Jamal Murray instead of Dragan Bender, and they just go with Jamal Murray and Devin Booker as kind of a Lillard-McCollum.
Mm-hmm.
And Lillard-McCollum don't play any defense, but they shoot, they score, whatever. Like, I think they could have been another version of that, and then you just try to find role player. You kind of do like the Philadelphia 76ers, but now you got two Iversons, and then you just get a bunch of role players in the front court. Like, that was such an obvious one to me that they should have done. I think we'll look back in a couple of years and be like, man, why did they draft that guy instead of that guy or that guy instead of that guy? I don't see them as being anything dangerous in the foreseeable future unless they're really bad this year and get the first pick and, you know, get a stud moving forward. But even then, they're probably 3-4 years away at best.
All right. Dragan Bender could turn into something amazing.
I think he could defensive. I think he will be one of those guys on his second contract, will be a really nice player for some other team.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Your next hot garbage team.
All right, the last of the hot garbage, and I'm guessing this is the one that you think could be in another category. And when I play against them on NBA 2K, they are. But the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay. I don't have them in the hot garbage category.
Wow.
I have them in the I don't want to call them hot garbage category.
Okay.
Mostly because...
Just because of Carlisle.
Because of Carlisle. Like, this team will overperform what it has every year as long as Carlisle is there. If they're not trying to push for 35 wins or 36 wins, and they're right there and, you know, in February, and people are like, oh, they're on a six-game winning streak, they could actually get into the playoffs, they're going to be there. So I don't want to call them hot garbage, but... You know, they're not good. So tell me why the Dallas Mavericks are hot garbage.
I just think there's only so much a good coach could do. Like he's very good, but he still has his limitations. And this raw, and I think for the first time we've heard, you know, Cuban basically saying, hey, look, you know, We've got to kind of go young and rebuild, and this feels to me a lot like Kobe's last year with the Lakers, where it's like, all right, it's this guy's going away tour. That's going to be what sells us tickets, because we're not going to be good. We're going to get a draft pick. This might be the last year where the lottery system is set up this well, so you know it might actually be a season where we should be really bad. And I think that they make all their revenue and they do their marketing around the idea of, you know, this is Dirk's farewell tour. Who cares if we're losing a bunch of games? And I think they will be.
So you don't think that there's any chance that Dennis Smith, Harrison Barnes, and Dirk Nowitzki forms a potent offense?
No, I do think that the one chance they have to be better than expected is that I think Wesley Matthews is another year removed, and I think he could be 90% of the old in his prime Wesley Matthews. And if that's the case, you've got a pretty dangerous two-way player. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, I would have gladly done something like, you know, Oshik, even Oshik, Etuan Moore, and a first for Matthews. Or I really think that Matthews could have a good year this year. Barnes, I think, you know, I would see him taking a step back more likely than another step forward, although I know the staff will have him be working on new things. I just think last year he was kind of underestimated by opponents. Now that he's the clear focal point of the defense, I think, you know, he might take a slight step back. So, you know, I'm happy Dirk, you know, is going to get to finish his career with Dallas, but I think that this year they just get beat up on. They're an incredibly tough division. I think they get beat on this year, and I think they're a 25-28 win team.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like he's going to figure out some stuff that's just going to annoy the crap out of everybody. And I'm going to watch some game where the whole game I'm like, we are better than this team, and we can't get any separation, and they just manage to edge in at the very end and beat us, and then I beat my head on a wall. That's just been my Dallas experience recently.
Yeah, I think what they did with Noel showed that they're willing to just kind of move on. And, you know, I don't know. I think that this is an organization that would be very happy to get a top 3-5 pick next year and know that the best way to do that is to have a bottom 3 record. So,
okay. Well, let's go to my other hot garbage team, and I'm sure I'll regret this. I put the Grizzlies as a hot garbage team.
Yeah, I was on the borderline, and honestly, I should have. I believe they are. I just thought it would be too much. So what don't you like about the Grizzlies?
So they're everything that's not named Mark or Mike. Chandler Parsons is done. The guy's cooked. When he did play last year, it was shocking how injured and bad he looked. Their starting shooting guard is Wayne Selden. We watched Wayne Selden. This guy's not an NBA player. If Tyreek Evans ends up as their starting shooting guard, we watched Tyreek Evans. He is completely busted. He is not able to hit a layup anymore. We got a great Instagram from Anthony Davis during unguarded practice where Tyreek Evans missed layup after layup and Anthony Davis is calling it junk. Right, so... There's no Vince Carter and Tony Allen held this team together on the wing, as crazy as that saying, because I thought Vince Carter, when he came in, made this team a lot better. He's smart. He hit the open shots. He was rough and tumble defensively. Tony Allen's always rough and tumble defensively, and they're replacing that with you know, James Ennis and Tyreek Evans. Like, there's not that kind of level of intelligence there. And Mark has already said something about, hey, if this team starts going the wrong way, we're going to need to look at possible trades. He said that. So if Mark wants out, this team is done and is going to be super hot garbage, no matter how good Mike Conley is.
So, okay. Yeah, I mean, I agree. My hesitation again, I think Fizdale's going to muck things up. Like, this is the team that constantly outperforms their expected win-loss. And maybe this is the year where it just goes the other way. And, I mean, you know, last year, they do this every year, they outscore their opponent by, like, 0.5 points per game, and then somehow... You know, they have a 43-48 wins. Yeah, I think this could be a year where they just get overwhelmed, but this is a team that outside of Golden State and maybe one or other two teams, if the game is tied with 3 minutes left, I think Memphis is going to win far more games than it's going to lose. So it comes down to, are they just going to get utterly and thoroughly beaten? So it doesn't even come down to the very end. And the way they play and the pace they play, it's just hard to be up by 10 or 12 on this team with 5 minutes to go. But it feels like this is the year where it's like, finally, one thing's going to go wrong. And those stretches that we've seen in previous years were like, they lost 16 out of 20 to end the year. Like, maybe that just happens for the majority of the season.
Yeah. And they did get rid of Troy Daniels, who gets every three-pointer he takes when he plays the Pelicans. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, even, like, looking at the, if I'm one of their fans, I'm trying to be optimistic. I go, okay, Wade Baldwin was a guy, you know, who has a good pedigree, and maybe he really gives us something this year. Jamichael Green, just kind of we scratch the tip of the surface and bring him back. And then you say Chandler Parsons done. I'm saying he can't possibly have a worse year than he did last year. So, like, if I'm trying to be optimistic as a Grizzlies fan, that's what I'd say. More likely, if I'm a Grizzlies fan, I'm going, man, can we please trade Marc Gasol for that Nets pick to Cleveland today, and start this rebuild that we probably should have done a year or two ago.
If you trade Gasol, are you trading Conley too?
I would see what that. I just think it's going to be hard value wise because not many teams need point guards, and then you do that and you have no culture, and you know you're starting completely from scratch. If somebody blew me away with an offer, yeah, but the teams that need point guards that badly are usually terrible, terrible teams, and they're not going to give up high picks in order to get a guy who doesn't fit the rest of their timeline. So I just think it would really be hard to, you know, move him and get real value.
Quick, who was the fourth highest scorer on the Memphis Grizzlies last year?
God, I wouldn't even know who third was.
You could guess third. Do third.
I can't. So Conley Gasol, if I had to guess third, I would have guessed, gosh. Well, I guess I would have guessed Zach Randolph.
Yeah.
So fourth, I guess I would guess Vince Carter.
Tony Allen.
Oh.
Tony Allen, then Jamichael Green, then Troy Daniels, then Vince Carter.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And none of them scored more than 9 points except for Tony Allen, who got 9.1.
Just, yeah.
He's coming in. He's going to be a big part of this team.
All right. Yeah, I wish I would have had the guts that you did. I wanted to put them in hot garbage, but just gave them too much respect based on their past. But I am right there with you.
Okay. And we're going to break right there. The podcast went long, so we're going to split it into two parts. Look for part two of this podcast where we talk about the rest of the Western Conference, starting with the teams that are fighting for the playoffs, including a team you might know about.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.